Chapter 1. The Near-Death Experience and Beyond. Near-death experiences are well established. A percentage, 5, 10, or even 20%, depending on the group under study, of people who have come back from the threshold of death, from a state characterized by a standstill of heartbeat and respiration, deep coma, falling away of important reflexes, and disturbed or diminished brain functioning, report impressive experiences as if they had been in a waking state. Many saw their body and the things that happened around it as if from above, and could hear what was said around it. Then they went through a dark tunnel into a bright light, experienced an overview of their whole life, and/or met with an entity of light or with deceased relatives. This is all very suggestive of their having set a few initial steps into the afterlife, of having had a glimpse of what comes after death. In many instances, the people who returned from the near-death situation appear to have been deeply influenced for the better. They come back to life less self-centered, more intent on loving other people, and more positive toward religion. One of the best elaborated and informative cases that can be found in the literature is the autobiography of the German-Austrian industrial manager Helmut Laun, who had such an experience during an operation after an automobile accident in 1929. When the Archbishop of Vienna, Cardinal Franz Koenig, asked him to write an account of the experience and his subsequent investigations of it, by which his life had been completely changed, his first reaction was negative. Quote, "On the one hand, because it is always hard to convey things that concern one's own soul to a greater public, on the other, because it is difficult to make comprehensible the kind of experiences such as fell to my share." End quote. This is a typical reaction. People with supernatural experiences want to protect their inner privacy. Many years later, he nevertheless decided to make his story public, hoping his testimony might help others who seek God with a sincere of heart. For his near-death experience had opened up for himself the way to God and the Church. The following fragments of his account are of special interest. While under an anesthetic during the emergency operation, Helmut Laun's life became endangered. The anesthetist told him he was concerned that Laun would not come back from the procedure. As for Laun himself, quote, "Time and space ceased to exist. The contact with the environment was broken off. Every feeling extinguished. But now I experienced something extraordinary. At first faintly, yet increasingly more clearly, it dawned upon me that I was there again. I woke up, as it were, in an immaterial space, separated from the world, and captured myself as I. My self-awareness was absolutely identical with my being a person in the world, and yet of a different nature. It is difficult to find the fitting words for that. I would rather say, I perceived again like previously in the world, but receptive, not of myself, by my own will, and yet actively, intensively, and with awe." End quote. Note that his personal identity, his ego, his soul, was just the same, fully intact. He continued, "In this immaterial space, space not in the earthly sense, I discerned in the far distance, unclear in the beginning, a spiritual center, like a light of tremendous intensity, a center unto which everything in that space was ordered. My spiritual eye, the center of my person, directed itself, as fascinated, to that still faraway center, and merely seeing it aroused in me a deep yearning to come nearer to it, as to the ultimate, most blissful goal. It looked as if everything I had ever longed and wished for in my life was put together there as in a focus, and alive in a fullness that exceeded all imagination and oriented to that center. And as if each creature couldn't but strive after the most intimate bond with just that ravishing spiritual center. Its perception was immediately accompanied with a profound feeling of happiness, for I noticed that I moved towards that most intensely desired center, that I got nearer to it, not in a straight line, but in circles that became narrower at each revolution. That way I came nearer and nearer to the center. At each revolution, it became more distinct to me, more ravishing, and at the same time, the yearning to attain this desired goal deepened, became ever more intense. It was as if I increasingly comprehended with full clarity that no earthly good had ever sent me that much into raptures, and could have sent me into raptures, as this incomprehensible light. Today, after so many years, I would say that from this mysterious center emanated an infinite fullness of life, a mysterious everything in all. In that yearning to wholly arrive at this center, there was no trace of annihilation, no thought of being extinguished in this tremendous sun, out of which boundless power seemed to irradiate. Very clearly joined with these raptures at coming nearer was the certainty that my own I would find its fulfillment there. End quote. Laun wrote this many years after the fact, from memory. The fascinating thing is that his memory, apparently an immaterial faculty, retains this experience, this perception of non-material realities, at all. He translates his retained perception of immaterial realities back into earthly words and material images: distance, space, center, sun. The words and images he uses do not transmit these realities directly. They can only approximate them. However, irrespective of these limitations, it is clear that the basic dimensions of the psyche turn out to be the same in the hereafter as in this life. The I, consciousness, thinking, feeling, longing for happiness and fulfillment. In other words, by death, life is changed, not taken away. Vita mutatur, non tollitur. Laun also gets a glimpse of a departed soul who was detained on the spot where it found itself and could not come nearer to the center. Quote, "On my way to the center, I saw, as I clearly remember, a man, not in his body, and yet I saw him very real. This man, or rather this spiritual being, had its gaze fixed on that center with an unquenchable craving, with a longing that at the same time caused deep pains because something, whatever it might be, impeded him to come nearer to the rapturous goal, if only a hair's breadth. He was pinpointed, as it were, and couldn't move any more, although he pined for it, as I could read from his expression, with all passion, with his whole soul. When I look back today, only this face, stiffened in pain, is clearly in my memory." End quote. He thinks the unhappy figure was Voltaire. The suggestion is that he was in hell, as there was no hope for him ever to come nearer to the center. Anyhow, Laun saw the suffering of that happiness-thirsty soul who can see the water but cannot get at it. In Laun's vision, there was no fire, no flames. But that need not mean that the soul in hell, or in purgatory for that matter, is not ablaze with a real and or mystical fire. In a certain sense, extreme longing and a feeling of burning converge. The extreme yearning of souls in hell or purgatory may feel more like a scorching fire than an earthly fire to our body. As we shall see, this is the view of St. Catherine of Genoa, the theologian of purgatory. Quote, "With each further revolution, with increasing approximation, the longing grew more vehement to fully get at the rapturous center as the highest desirable good. All beings of the space beyond recognize that as clearly, like all of us perceive the common world around us with the same senses. Since the movement went spiral-wise, the speed of approaching increased constantly. But at some point of the track, I was suddenly held back. The movement came to a halt. Yes, went backwards, so that I moved outward again and withdrew from the yearned-for center. This backward movement was as smarting to me as approaching had sent me in raptures, and in effect, the pain which increased with the growing distance consisted herein, that I had to take leave of the good I had recognized as the profoundest possible happiness. End quote. This was why he kept repeating over and over again the word terrible after coming out of the anesthesia. Thereafter, his emotional life was marked by this homesickness for the light, this sun he was to identify as God. It is the bitter pain of homesickness people feel after receiving the grace of a very intimate contact with God. But in a more subtle way, not consciously recognized for what it is, it works in each human soul. This notion of homesickness is no doubt also a good designation for the longing for God of the soul in purgatory. In these near-death accounts, what would have been the next steps if the experience had not been broken off and the person had not stopped on the threshold of death? Interestingly, there are several accounts of communication by souls from purgatory that correspond to profound near-death experiences, like the one described by Helmut Laun, and give an impression of what happens beyond them. We shall cite two such trustworthy communications. The first comes from a deceased priest who appeared numerous times to the German princess, Eugenia von der Leyen, a woman who was visited in great numbers by the poor souls begging for her aid, for holy masses, prayers, mortifications, and other suffrages of the Catholic Church. It is evident that some persons, motivated by pity and mercy, are called to a hard life of self-denial in the service of the suffering souls. Eugenia was one of them. An emotionally stable, amiable, cheerful and realistic woman, she shared with other privileged helpers of the poor souls the characteristic that she preferred to keep silent about her contacts with these souls. If she hadn't been ordered by her spiritual director to keep a diary on her experiences, they would have fallen into oblivion. Experiences such as the ones she describes, strange and perhaps incredible as they may appear when one takes cognizance of them for the first time, are of course not run-of-the-mill events. On the other hand, they are less rare than one might think. Many Catholic publications testify to the reality of such apparitions both in the past and the present. But although they are on the whole at least as well documented and often much more informative than the kind of manifestations of the dead reported in the parapsychological literature, they are largely ignored outside the Catholic world. It is the same in the field of miracles. If the paranormal points to religion, in particular the Catholic religion, you should not take it seriously. Aside from that, regarding reports, parapsychological and other, about manifestations of the dead, we must critically distinguish between real and pseudo-communications, real and pseudo-apparitions. The latter is the case, for example, with spiritualist phenomena. These two fundamentally different categories are often confused in the so-called scientific parapsychological literature. Eugenia von der Leyen reports the apparitions of the soul of a Dominican priest who informed her about the events right after death. When this soul first appeared, on September 5, 1925, his face was still wholly unrecognizable, a gray lump. He is rather quiet, but mutters incomprehensible words. It seems Latin. Eugenia continues in her journal. September 10th. The Dominican is not frightening, but very often around. September 13th. The Dominican is a father I have known well, a Frenchman. Was a long time with me. Nodded assent when I started praying. September 17th. I was very sad about something this night and cried. Then a hand was laid on my head. I looked up. It was the Dominican. He said, "Why do you weep?" I said, "Because I am not content with myself." He, "Have confidence and be humble. I, how can I help you then? He, by mortification. Then he remained for a long time. Is not scary at all. It is the first apparition that began talking unasked for. Typically, ghosts, that is, souls from purgatory, seem to wait humbly until their host questions them. On September 27th, the priest gives the information we are interested in here. Quote, he was there for a long time. Please tell me if we contemplate our Lord at death at once. He, yes, an awful shivering of the soul in adoration, and then sinking away in the purification. I, aren't you allowed to say more to me? He, no, the more you love God, the greater the beatitude. Act according to that. End quote. He appeared to her for a few months. She, to speed up his purification with her prayers and mortifications, and he, to give her some priestly advice. In contrast with so many frightening apparitions of souls from purgatory, Eugenia noted that, I am not at all afraid of the Dominican. I rather enjoy his coming. Although still in purgatory, this soul could tell her on November 2nd, I am doing fine. The point the Dominican makes is that the soul of the deceased indeed arrives at its destination, the light, God. An awful shivering of the soul in adoration. That is apparently the moment of truth. In the face of the eternal light and the infinite purity, the soul understands her imperfections and gravitates to the place or state of perfection. It seems to be a spontaneous, natural movement, then sinking away in the purification. Our second illustration of what is to come beyond the point where the near-death experience stops is taken from the communications of a soul not in purgatory, but in hell. This is the soul of a young woman from Munich, who, after dying in a car accident in 1937, appeared to a girlfriend who was a novice in a monastery. The deceased told her former friend to stop praying for her, as she was in hell, and gave a startling account of how her way of life and her repeated rejections of the invitations of grace had finally brought her to her terrible destiny. A week after her death, she wrote somewhat of a letter, which her friend read in a vision that deeply and clearly imprinted itself on her memory.
There, all of a sudden, during our drive home, my husband was blinded by a car from the opposite direction. Jesus, it went through me. Not as a prayer, only as a scream. A crushing pain pressed me together. In comparison with the present pain, a trifle. Then I was senseless. Curious that morning, inexplicably, the idea crossed my mind, you might go to Mass once again. It sounded like imploring. Clearly and resolutely my no cut off this thread of thinking. As for me, I suddenly woke up from the darkness of the moment of my departure, saw myself, flooded as with a glaring light. It was at the same place where my corpse was laying. It happened like in a theater, when the lights extinguish in one moment, the curtains rustle apart, in a dismal light, an unsuspected scene emerges, the scene of my life. As in a mirror, my soul showed itself to me, the graces trampled underfoot since my childhood, until the last no against God. I felt like a murderer to whom his inanimate victim is presented during the trial. Repent? Never. Be ashamed? Never. But any less could I endure it being under the eyes of the God I had rejected. So only one thing was left, to flee. Like Cain fled from the corpse of Abel, so my soul tore itself away from this horrific sight. That was the particular judgment. The invisible judge spoke, "Be gone." There my soul went, down like a sulfuric yellow shadow to the abode of eternal torment.
With her last no against God, she entered eternity. If the tree fall to the south, or to the north, in what place soever it shall fall, there shall it be, says the Bible. Awakening in a new light, seeing her own dead body, a vision of her whole life from the viewpoint of good and evil. These are familiar elements in near-death experiences, but a step further is her definitive conclusion, apparently reached in the presence of God, who in this case is not adored and intensely desired, but hated. The flight from God down to hell is as spontaneous a movement of the soul as the sinking away into purgatory in the case of the Dominican priest. Although in the immaterial space hereafter there is no up and down, both movements away from God are experienced as falling movements, seemingly caused by the soul's weight of sin and its effects. Saint Faustina Kowalska relates in her diary her mystical experience of the complete moral self-insight that one day will be revealed to every man at the particular judgment after death. Quote, "Once I was summoned to the judgment seat of God. I stood alone before the Lord. Jesus appeared such as we know him during his passion. Suddenly I saw the complete condition of my soul as God sees it. I could clearly see all that is displeasing to God. I did not know that even the smallest transgressions will have to be accounted for. What a moment! Who can describe it? To stand before the thrice holy God. Jesus asked me, 'Who are you?' I answered, 'I am your servant, Lord. You are guilty of one day of fire in purgatory.' I wanted to throw myself immediately into the flames of purgatory, but Jesus stopped me." End quote. Saint Faustina transmits the awfulness of the soul's confrontation with the eternal, its insight that perfect holiness is required before it can enjoy God's presence, the smallest imperfections having more weight than even a pure soul as Faustina's had been aware, and the instinctive impulse of the soul to be cleansed, even in the flames of purgatory. These examples give at least some impression of the crucial moment when the soul has to render an account of its whole life in the face of God. That is the awful hour of truth. Salvation, with or without purgatory, the latter seems more rare, or damnation. One of the main reasons for the occasional apparitions of souls from the dead is undoubtedly to urge the living to draw their consequences from this reality.